Shivaya, welfare, Lokasya, of all living beings, Bhavaya, for flourishing, Bhutaye, for economic development, Ye, one who is. Uttama Shloka Parayanam. Devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead. Janam. Man. Jivanti. Do live. Nam. But not. Atma Artham. Selfish interest. Asau. That. Para ashrayam. Shelter for others. Mumocham. Gave up. Nirvidyam. Being freed from all attachment. Kutam. For what reason? Kalevaram, material body. Translation and purport by His Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development, and happiness of others. They do not live for any selfish interest. So even though the emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his material body, which was shelter for others? Purport. Parikshit Maharaj was an ideal king and householder because he was a devotee of the personality of Godhead. A devotee of the Lord automatically has all good qualifications, and the emperor was a typical example of this. Personally, he had no attachment for all the worldly opulences in his possession. But since he was king for the all-around welfare of his citizens, he was always busy in the welfare work of the public, not only for this life, but also for the next. He would not allow slaughterhouses or killing of cows. He was not foolish and partial administrator who would arrange for the protection of one living being and allow another to be killed. Because he was a devotee of the Lord, he knew perfectly well how to conduct his administration for everyone's happiness, men, animals, plants, and all living creatures. He was not selfishly interested. Selfishness is either self-centered or self-extended. He was neither. His interest was to please the Supreme Truth Personality of Godhead. The king is the representative of the Supreme Lord, and therefore the king's interest must be identical with that of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord wants all living beings to be obedient to him and thereby become happy. Therefore, the king's interest is to guide all subjects back to the kingdom of God. Hence, the activities of the citizens should be so coordinated that they can at the end go back home back to Godhead. Under the administration of a representative king, the kingdom is full of opulence. At that time, human beings need not eat animals. There are ample food grains, milk, fruit, and vegetables, so that the human beings as well as animals can eat sumptuously and to their heart's content. If all living beings are satisfied with the food and shelter and obey the prescribed rules, there cannot be any disturbance between one living being and another. Emperor Parikshit was worthy king, and therefore all were happy during his regime. Shivaya Lokasya Bhavaya Bhutaye Yautma Shloka Parayana Vina Jivanti Natmartam Asavo Parashrayam Bumocha Nirvidya Kuta Kalevaram. Those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development, and happiness of others. They do not live for any selfish interest, So even though the Emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his material body, which was sheltered for others? Om Jnana Tirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yenam Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaham Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sinubhyaiva Cha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaham Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So in this particular verse, we are continuing the questioning posed by the Shaunaka Muni on behalf of the assembled sages to Suta Goswami. And specifically, if we look previous couple of verses, we can kind of highlight three particular questions being presented to Suta Goswami. So the first question was, how did it so happen that Parikshit met this great sage, making it possible for Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken? So how did that even happen? Like, then the second question was, being that Maharaj Parikshit was so powerful, you know, young, influential king, why was he willing to give up his life and fast to death, basically? It says, why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Why did he want to give up everything, including his life? And then finally, in this verse that we are discussing today, it says, basically it's described, the king is actually shelter for all the citizens. Basically, he provides the guide, he's the leader, and it's described in the purport, the interest of the king is the same as the interest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is actually to guide people back home, back to Godhead. And being in such important position, even though he was detached from all the material possessions, all the opulence, still assumption is because of that role he should have stayed, because so many people were depending on him. So the question was being asked, even though the Emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his material body, which was the shelter for others? So, three questions. Now, if you look further in the verses to follow, one would think Suta Goswami would, you know, immediately make an answer and say, oh, because this and this, and that's why, you know, this and this happened. But that's not the case. I was looking in the last few days, and I went, like, you know, page after page after page, verse after verse, and Suta Goswami doesn't give an immediate answer. Because he wants to present the big picture. Typically in our ordinary lives, we tend to kind of narrow down on, you know, just, you know, what's happening today. We don't really see the big picture. But these great personalities, they look things from totally different perspective. They have a much bigger vision. They try to understand what is the desire of the Supreme Lord. What does Krishna want in this particular situation? And being that Krishna is God, his plans are huge, they're big, and they take place not just over one day, but over centuries and you know, thousands of years. Krishna has big plans. So anyhow, Suta Goswami, as we will see in the verses to come, basically, he goes on to discuss the meeting of Srila Narada and Vyasadeva. And it goes on for the next three chapters. Basically, there is a meeting of Narada and Vyasadeva, and then Narada gives instructions to Srila Vyasadeva. So next three chapters, basically, it goes on describing what is supposed to be the answer to the questions that we just mentioned. Now, one particular line in this verse kind of captures our attention. And I kind of like to narrow down on that particular line and take our focus on that. And what it is, basically, if you look second line of the verse, it says, Uttama Shloka Parayana. Uttama Shloka Parayana. And what that means, it says, devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead. So Maharaj Parikshit is being described as personality who is totally devoted to the cause of personality of Godhead. Meaning he has no other selfish interest. Whatever he does is in harmony with the Lord's will. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport, because he was great devotee, he possessed all the good qualities. Now we may think, I'm devotee, so I have all good qualities. But we should say, no, hold on. We are aspiring devotees. And just because we are here doesn't mean we automatically have good qualities. What it means, we should be cultivating, we should be aspiring to develop those qualities. Of course, we should see all other Vaishnavas. Oh, this devotee, he has all the good qualities. And this devotee, she has all wonderful qualities. But myself, I'm cultivating these qualities. So let us briefly take a look to see what these qualities are. Because if we want to develop something, we obviously want to know what is it that we are cultivating. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes to inform Arjuna about the divine and demoniac natures. And he goes on to explain, saying, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, that's the big one, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy, and from the passion for honor. So Krishna is saying, these transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to the godly man endowed with divine nature. Very nice verse. So these are the qualities we are trying to develop. And as we can see, Maharaj Parikshit, he already possessed all those great qualities. Now, there is one beautiful story I wanted to share with you, which Prabhupada tells to devotees in one of his lectures. The lecture was basically on the day of the disappearance of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And it took place in 1968, if I'm not wrong. 1968, December 1968. And Prabhupada tells, the reason I like that class, some of you already heard the class, but it's very clear recording. When you listen, you almost feel like you're, Srila Prabhupada is with you in the room. It's such a good quality, sound quality. And Prabhupada starts first with chanting Guru Ashtakam, Then followed by kirtan, beautiful chanting, like so. When you hear it, just you know, it kind of brings chills, really. When you hear Prabhupada chanting in separation from his spiritual master, and when he finished chanting Guru Ashtakam prayers, the first thing Prabhupada said, I thought it was very sweet. He said, "I was thinking about Jayananda Prabhu. And just as I was thinking, he came." Prabhupada is explaining what's happening in the room. And I, you know, you can actually visualize and see all these things happening in your mind's eye. So Jayananda Prabhu was, he went and he brought a picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And Prabhupada was so happy and he was telling him, "Oh, please, you know, take care of the picture, put it in there so it doesn't fall." So anyhow, then Srila Prabhupada starts the class by telling the story. And he goes on by saying how there was a sage giving blessings to different kinds of people. And he says, "Rajaputra Chiramjiva, your king's son." Basically, he's addressing the son of the king, prince. And the sage is telling to the prince, "You live forever." And then he's saying, "Muniputra Majiva," to the son of the Muni, who is Brahmachari, living very austere life. He's saying, "You don't live." And then to the sadhu, to the devotee, Vaishnava, he's saying, he blessed him, Jiva va marava. Either you live or you die. It's the same for you, for the devotee. And to the butcher, he's saying, you don't live and you don't die. So you would think like, wait a second, it doesn't make sense. Like, you know, how could you not live and not die? And how could you, you know, how could you be equally disposed to living or dying? You know, typically people, you know, they don't want to die. So Prabhupada goes on to explain. And he's saying, as far as the son of the king, because he has so much facility for, you know, sense pleasure, you know, good life, you know, no austerities. So basically, you know, go on living, enjoying basically the fruits of your previous pious activities. Because once that you know, bank account is finished, you're gonna have to, you know, either start earning again your pious activities to enjoy, or you're gonna actually degrade. And then as far as the Brahmachari, who was the son of the Muniputra, because he was living in such austere conditions, basically the sage was saying, "You die immediately because of such accumulated pious activities. Your next life will be so auspicious, but right now, you know, you're living very austere life, and you know it's hard." And as far as the butcher, basically, the occupation of butcher is so hellish. Basically, you know, killing the animals day after day. And basically, that life condition is so miserable. Basically, that person is suffering even in this life. What to speak about next life? You know, after this life, the karma will, you know, just be so terrifying that, you know, that person will suffer for so many lifetimes for all the animals that he was slaughtering. So to the butcher, basically, sage was saying, "You neither live, neither die. Because, you know, whichever way you look, it's going to be misery for you." So, but as far as devotee, that is very, very interesting. As far as devotee, Prabhupada goes on to explain in his lecture. And he's connecting the dots, basically. And he's saying, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, he's saying appearance and disappearance, basically, no, it's all the same for the Vaishnava. Because Vaishnava only has one purpose And that is to fulfill the mission of the previous acharyas and the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Srila Prabhupada goes on basically glorifying his spiritual master and describing how Bhaktisiddhanta was son of the magistrate, basically who was in charge of Jagannath Temple. And, you know, he was born in a very influential family. Bhaktivinoda was a very, very influential personality at that time. And but despite everything, Bhaktisiddhanta, he took very, very austere life. He was Naishthika Brahmachari, and he pretty much dedicated all his life to the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada said something interesting. He's basically after saying how Bhaktisiddhanta was very austere despite all the opulence he was born in. Prabhupada says, Bhaktivinoda, he wanted to spread Krishna consciousness movement even back in 1896. And he said, at that time, he actually sent the book, Life and Precepts of Lord Chaitanya, is that right? He wanted to send that to the West, basically, to spread the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada said, fortunately, on that same year, he said, I was born. Srila Prabhupada was born that same year. And Prabhupada goes on to say something really interesting, which kind of struck my curiosity. Prabhupada said, who would know that I would meet Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati? He said, he was born in different family, I was born in different family. He said, who would know I would have come in contact with him? And who would know I would have come to the West? And who would know that you American boys and girls will come and help me in my mission to serve my spiritual master? And then Prabhupada says, this is all Krishna's arrangement. This is all Krishna's arrangement. So, now if we go back to our verse that we are discussing, so why did Maharaj Parikshit so willingly accept the curse of that little Brahmana boy that cursed him to die in 7 days? Because he understood. Maharaj Parikshit, he was great Mahabhagavat devotee. He understood when he was baby in the womb of his mother, Krishna came to protect him from the Brahmastra. But now, Krishna obviously had something different in plan. Krishna could easily, you know, counteract the curse of the Brahmana boy and change everything. But no, Krishna actually had certain plan, and he understood. And that's why we see how all this took place and how basically the circumstances developed. And which were a right situation for the Bhagavatam to be spoken, which we are now fortunately having opportunity to discuss and hear. So anyhow, I will finish with the concluding words, which Srila Prabhupada is saying at the end of the class, basically, you know, after describing everything and making the statement how it is actually all Krishna's arrangement. Srila Prabhupada is saying something really important. He's saying, I'm going to read this just to kind of make it more clear. He's saying, now on this occasion of my spiritual master's departure, as I'm trying to execute his will, similarly, I shall also request you to execute same order throughout my will. I'm an old man and I can also pass away at any moment. That is nature's law. Nobody can check it. So that is not very astonishing. But my appeal to you on this auspicious day of the departure of my Guru Maharaj, that at least to some extent you have understood the essence of Krishna consciousness movement. You should try to push it on. People are suffering for want of this consciousness. Very, very important. People are suffering for want of this consciousness. And then Prabhupada says, now, you American boys and girls who have taken to this movement, please take it more seriously. That is the mission of Lord Chaitanya and my Guru Maharaj. And we are also trying to execute that will by the disciplic succession. And then Prabhupada is concluding, he's saying, you have come forward to help me. I shall request you all that I shall go away, but you shall live. Don't give up pushing on this movement, and you will be blessed by Lord Chaitanya and His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. Very nice. So Prabhupada is saying, don't give up pushing this movement, and you will be blessed by Lord Chaitanya and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So, what more we can ask than the blessings of previous acharyas and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in coming days, we have auspicious appearance of Gaurahari, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is a wonderful opportunity to help us basically focus on the sweet pastimes of Shishi Gonitai. And I'm looking forward to that. Thank you so much. I'll stop here. If anybody would like to say anything, any comments, any questions, any critics, please do so. Yes. I saw Madhumati first.
Just have a comment. As you were describing Prabhupada talking about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, I was thinking, wow, it must have been, you can see that Prabhupada was, you know, asking everybody to take on the mission. But I'm also thinking that it must be, I don't know what kind of feeling Prabhupada must have had, the fact that he's talking about his spiritual master in front of those who don't have clue about him, and they just know him and his love for his spiritual master, and he wants to give that love to these newcomers. Mm-hmm. And I just was meditating on that as you were speaking that. Thank you very much for the nice class.
Yes, thank you. I was thinking the same, because if you look back, the movement was very young. All these people were practically new to Krishna consciousness. Most of them were, Westerners, not from really background of India, so not familiar at all with the Vedic culture. So just imagine all these young people, they were just in the moon for like a couple of years, maybe 2-3 years, 4 years the most. And Prabhupada is asking them to take such important mission. He's asking them to take it up seriously. And he's saying, and he actually goes in that lecture explaining how he wrote a letter to his spiritual master back in 1936, just a few days before Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj departed from this world, asking basically, I'm a householder, my Guru Maharaj, how can I serve you? I cannot be directly with you. And Bhaktisiddhanta replied, my dear so-and-so, I think you should push on this movement in the English-speaking countries. And Prabhupada, so humbly he is expressing, he said, I took it a little bit seriously. he's just saying, I took it a little bit seriously. He said, I studied the purport of Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on the verse in Gita, Vyavasayatmika Buddhir Ekha Kuru Nandana, where Krishna is saying, Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying, is one should take the order of the spiritual master as the life and soul. So Prabhupada is saying, in that light, I took it a little bit seriously. He's so humble, but you can see he spent all his life, from these early days in 1930s, when he received that instruction, Over 30 years, he was cultivating the desire to come and bring Krishna consciousness to the West. So we should try to follow in his example. Yes.
Prabhupada. That class you referenced, is that San Francisco,
1968? I believe so, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't say where, but it is 1968, December.
And Jayananda's there.
Yeah. So
Prabhupada says, who knew that I would meet my spiritual master? Who knew that I would come from the West? I remember listening to that. It was so sweet.
Yes, a beautiful class, And the kirtan before the class is so nice. I listen it over and over. Okay, thank you so much. Oh, I'm sorry, Mother Sukada. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that one of the most amazing things about Srila Prabhupada is, you mentioned his humility. You know, from the very beginning to the very end, like everything he did, he always gave credit to his spiritual master and all the previous acharyas. And he also always gave credit to his disciples. He would say, I want to thank you all for helping me. You know, so that quality can be very elusive. You know, it's so easy when you're successful, whoever you are, to take the credit, you know, but Prabhupada was always just giving it to everyone else, you know, and just realizing he was an instrument of Krishna and his spiritual master. And thank you.
Yes. No, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. That is so true. He would never personally take credit. He would always praise his disciples for assisting him in the mission, or he would offer the gratitude to his spiritual master, for he would say, I have been given all the facilities now to preach. Yeah, that is very true. Yes, Mother.
Another thing was that Srila Prabhupada is asking there for his followers to do so, to take what he has taken seriously, for them to take seriously. And I was thinking how Srila Prabhupada was successful in doing so, that his followers did take it seriously, and not only that, they gave it to us. And so, yeah, that's the mercy of all the acharyas, that he was successful and his disciples were successful, and hopefully we can do the same.
Absolutely. Thank you all so very much. Oh, can you go in the room?
Is such a special place. We always try to give importance to Srila Prabhupada's words. But this trip I had in Mayapur, I saw the devotee not only giving importance to Prabhupada's word, they act on it. It was such a phenomenon. Even in 10 years in the movement, some devotees like trying to create a movement where hearing Prabhupada creates a vision. They say, what do you mean, hearing Prabhupada, what does that produce? A vision, it gives a vision. And then apply intelligence from the association that we learn to fulfill that mission. I was just such a phenomenon. I was like, everywhere I was walking, devotees are really like want to serve Prabhupada. It was wonderful. I mean, Alachua devotees are wonderful. But it's nice to see also that in other places how they're really acting. Maybe we can do a little bigger here, like act on it, mm-hmm. Not just appreciating on it. Appreciation is good, but acting on it, it's maybe
more difficult.
Yeah. I have a question.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little brief story? I want to know, how did Prabhupada attracted you in this movement? I know you didn't prepare, but I would like to know if it's something.
Sure, I can say briefly. When I was maybe 13, 14, my brother actually left to serve army. In the country I come from, it's a mandatory or boys go to service for 1 year in army. So my brother had books, and I was kind of like, you know, teenage kid, kind of like trying to learn about myself. And before he left to army, he told me, I have some books in my cupboard. If you like, you may want to check it out. And sure enough, I always loved to read. So I opened his cupboard and I found Prabhupada's books. It was Science of Self-Realization and Journey to Higher Planets, or something like that. I don't remember exactly. So I read the books, and it kind of really clicked in my mind. I just the description that Prabhupada stresses over and over how we are not this body, and I've been kind of thinking for a while, like, you know, how is it possible that all of a sudden, you know, you die and that's it, there's nothing after it? So after I heard from Prabhupada how the soul travels from body to body, it really kind of caught my attention, but it didn't really fructify in anything special till several years later. I was in a high school in the city of Sarajevo, and to be honest, I never thought I would ever meet devotees where I lived. I thought these people live in America or, you know, somewhere else, but, you know, the chance of me ever meeting any of them is, you know, zero. So one day I was kind of like in between classes, and I was listening to radio, and all of a sudden I hear the interviewer basically questioning the person that was guesting the show about reincarnation. And I remember from the books I read about reincarnation, and then all of a sudden I put the dots. Wait a second, these are the people that I read the books about. Is it really true that they actually have a center here where, you know, I was in there for like 4 years in Sarajevo? So, yeah, they had a temple. It was a relatively new temple, but there were devotees preaching and spreading Krishna consciousness. And about 6 months later, this can go on for too long, so I'm going to just summarize it. 6 months later, there was a war in my country. So everything fell apart. The people became mad and started fighting just over, you know, different religious belongings and so on. So all country turned into the mess, big mess. And I was in a school which was kind of like a government-sponsored school, type of military academy as well. And since I was the final class, basically ready to graduate that spring, the principal decided to actually let us go earlier because of the chaos in the country. And I remember sitting in a hall of this size. There was about 200 people, and they were reading the list, long list. They were actually assigning people where everybody will go. Basically, you graduate and you get immediately your duties in government service, and you go to that place. And as they were reading the list, I prayed as I never prayed ever after in my life. I prayed so hard, Krishna, please, please send me to the city where devotees have a temple. And there was only like barely maybe 3 or 4 in all country of Yugoslavia at that time. And they were reading the names, and I'm kind of like, you know, hiding in my chair and praying, like, please, Lord, please, you know, don't put me, you know, in a place where there's no devotees. And there was only Belgrade and Zagreb at that time that had actually temples, which I heard from the Bhaktas in Sarajevo. And finally my name came, and they said my name, and they said, I'm going to Belgrade. And that's where the temple is. Anyhow, a long story short, About 2 months later, I joined the temple. I gave up my military duties and so on. It's a Krishna's mercy, I would say. It's a mercy of Vaishnavas to take me. So, thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Haribol.